Ah, youth. Young adults navigate life sometimes awkwardly and sometimes with poetry. I am Suzanne Lang, bringing you a novel idea. Today we'll visit with Parisa Akbari, whose story of queer love in high school and the poetry that carries them through is just another epic love poem. And we'll talk with Parisa in just a moment. Later, we'll visit with two youth poet ambassadors, Naomi Coe and Cade Palmer, along with their mentor, Maxine Flasher Duzgunish of the Marin Poetry Center. And finally, we'll hear from author and poet Jenny Orvino, reading the work of Naomi Shihab Nye. So stay with us. It's a novel idea. Two queer girls in Catholic school together become best friends over poetry. Writing a never-ending poem together becomes their mode of deep communication. And then they fall in love with each other. They aren't fully prepared for this evolution in their relationship, and each girl faces decisions in family relationships that challenge. Through it all, they keep writing and reading poems. The book is just another epic love poem, and the author is Parisa Akbari. Let's visit with her now. This is a book for teenagers, young adults, about teenagers coming of age, and it features queer characters navigating love and friendship. And it's about families and where we come from in our multicultural society. And it's about language and poetry. So, Parisa, set the story up for us a bit.
The premise of Just Another Epic Love Poem is that Mitra has transferred into a Catholic school, which is something that she has no experience with, being Iranian American and not being Catholic at age 13. And she feels like quite an outsider, but she finds a best friend in one of her classes named B, with whom she starts this poem that they write back and forth together in a never-ending style. And the book begins 5 years into their friendship and into their never-ending epic poem when they're seniors. And Mitra's trying to come to terms with the fact that, although it feels cliche to her, that she is in love with B, she's in love with her best friend. And what does it mean for her to trust and to be vulnerable? Would she open herself up to the idea of loving B at the same time as she's trying to understand if she could open herself up to her mother returning into her life and trusting her mother again after her mother's experience of addiction?
The story is told in Mitra's voice. So this is her story. And I guess I'm wondering about that choice of telling it in her first person voice.
I feel with young adult literature that first person can be pretty accessible and immediate. And I think it can grant teens and readers of all ages this immersive access to some of the emotions. And so my hope in writing it in first person from Mitra's perspective was to really allow people to plunge into what it feels like to be a teen who is really torn up by her unrequited, from her perspective, love of her best friend, and also grappling with thoughts about reconciling with her mom, and just being able to have that entry point into the emotional heart of the story.
There also is a fair amount of poetry in the book, with references to other poets, and we could talk a little bit about that. And B and Mitra use poetry really as their bond. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that. I'm wondering, are you a poet, and what role does poetry play in your life, and how you centered the book around these expressions?
I felt like poetry could provide access to the emotional core of the story in a few different ways. One being that poetry is really a lifeblood in Iranian culture. It's something that dates back to centuries ago with the ancient Persian poets like Hafez and Ferdowsi and Omar Khayyam and Rumi. These poets are not just writers in Iranian culture, but they also provide a lot of the mythology and the spirituality and access to the divine that I consider to be a big part of the cultural experience for me. And so I wanted to bring that element of spirituality for Mitra into the story because she's in an environment that's a Catholic school, which is steeped in its own religious and spiritual views that she really doesn't feel like she gets on a deep level. She doesn't really get it. She doesn't get access to it. And it's not her cultural background, but she's grappling with these existential and spiritual questions about trust and love and vulnerability. And so I wanted her to have her own way to access spirituality through her cultural understanding that comes from poetry. So that was one avenue for me. And the other being that I think oftentimes teens especially can find poetry to be pretty out of reach in the sense that when you learn about it in school, it's often these stuffy, older, dead white writers that maybe feel out of touch with what young people, young women, people of color, and queer folks today are dealing with. And I wanted to show that there's a way for poetry to really be anybody's language and that kids of color and queer kids can turn it into something that becomes this real tether to their emotional experience or to each other. So Mitra and B use it as this almost like a structure or a skeleton around which they build their relationship and their friendship. And they can tell each other things in that poem that they can't verbalize out loud. It gives them a language in which to talk about things that are maybe too hard, too personal, or too scary to name out loud. So I wanted to introduce that as something that young people could hopefully see as a language for them.
In the book, you share their writing between each other, and you actually can perceive the individual poetic voices of each character of B and of Mitra. And I wonder for you as the writer, what was the challenge in creating these unique voices through the poetry that they're communicating with one another, but have their own authenticity as well?
I was trying to think about the fact that these are two young people who, at the point that we meet them in the book, have been friends for a long time. And so they probably share similar inside jokes, they talk similarly. They have a lot of common language between them, but they also are really distinct people. B is louder and more expressive and takes up more space. And Mitra, at the beginning of the story, is very self-contained and reserved. And the poem that she writes with B is maybe one of the only places where she opens up. My hope in creating different narrative voices for them was to show that even though there's so much similarity in the two of them and in their friendship, that there's such a seamlessness between their segments of poetry, that B has this expressiveness. She really, her lines are much longer and she's more free form and, you know, doesn't always follow the same syntax that we might use when we're thinking of what classic poetry should sound like. And Mitra, on the other hand, is more contained. And she's maybe more thoughtful about her word choice and more deliberate. And as the story goes on, we see them mix their poem even further so that they're not just trading stanzas anymore, but they're trading actually line by line. And that was really something that I enjoyed exploring, what it would look like for them to, as they get closer and more connected, merge their poetry even further into one voice.
And are you a poet? And what role does poetry play in your own life?
I love poetry, and I've written it since I was a teen. So in some way, writing just another epic love poem had me reflecting on the kinds of things that I wrote about when I was growing up. And I remember really finding my way into poetry through some of the poets that, you know, were people of color, were either ancient Persian poets, or I read a lot of Neruda and Lorca, and finding that, oh, there are these voices that I really connect to in a way that maybe I didn't with some of the more classical European poets that I learned in school. So writing has been a big part of my experience with poetry, and I think it's been a way for me to see how I can distill and be more concise, because I do love to write long form stuff like novels or even essays and things like that. But poetry really has to pack a punch. And one of the times when I really leaned on writing poetry was I have a disability that affects my joints, and I stopped being able to write very much by hand. And so I couldn't do the long form handwriting that I used to do. And so I kind of challenged myself to be a lot more thoughtful and a lot more concise about the words I used. And I saw poetry as this accessible way for me to still tell a story, but in a very compact way.
Yes. Well, as you say, they're in this Catholic school, and by the time they become seniors, they're in this poetry seminar with a teacher, Ms. Acosta, who is a former nun. And she's someone who is very perceptive and encouraging, especially to Mitra. And Mitra seems to be funny and obsessed about the fact that Miss Acosta is a former nun, when really she's much more of a full-blown person that we could maybe see. And so often I think people, young people, especially in high school, may find a person like that who is sympathetic and perceptive and encouraging. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that character.
I thought about how Mitra with Miss Acosta is very concerned and afraid about how she'll be perceived, that she'll be seen as much in the way that she has by other teachers and by other students in the Catholic school, that she'll be seen as an outsider, somebody who's not Catholic, who's not worth their time, who's different in a way that is kind of tarnished. And she's especially afraid that if and when Miss Acosta learns that Mitra is queer, that any sort of tenderness or connection that they've felt will evaporate. And so Mitra has all these concerns about how she's going to be perceived. And at the same time, she's looking at Miss Acosta and just seeing, oh my gosh, she's this almost 80-year-old nun. And she's characterizing Miss Acosta in her own way. And it takes her time to start to be able to see Miss Acosta as a whole person who has a lot of nuance and complexity. And I think she also understands that Miss Acosta sees her in that she sees the fullness of Mitra. And I was really lucky growing up in Catholic school to have a few teachers that I felt fully seen by in the way that Mitra feels with Miss Acosta. So I really drew from my experiences with teachers who went out of their way to let me know that they saw me and to share what it was that they thought I had to offer, to suggest that I had promise or that I had something to say to the world, and also to embrace the fact that I was a spiritual person, even though I didn't fit into the strictures of what the school might define spirituality as. So that was something that really moved me, was when teachers would recognize that I did have a lot of existential thoughts and questions about what's bigger than us and what is divine, and that they celebrated that.
So you just revealed something about yourself too. So is this experience that they're in of being in this Catholic school, and she's a Persian Muslim girl in this Catholic school. So you were in a similar position?
I was. In a way, I wrote Mitra's story as a almost an opposite journey to what I took. I grew up in Catholic school from kindergarten until 10th grade, and then I transferred to a public high school, secular, non-religious school. And that was a really interesting, eye-opening, and jarring transition. And so I've thought a lot about what it would be like for somebody to make the reverse voyage. So I told Mitra's story as somebody coming from a non-religious school background, from an Iranian family. And, you know, her father was raised Muslim, her mom was raised Zoroastrian, but she doesn't know where she falls yet spiritually, and she's trying to figure that out. And she is thrust into this totally different environment in a conservative Catholic school at eighth grade, at 13, when she's also just starting to get the whispers of her sexuality. And so I was trying to imagine, what would it be like for somebody to take a journey that was in some ways similar to mine, but in other ways, a different type of transition than what I experienced?
So you had the touchstones that you could ground the story in.
Yeah.
So Mitra and her friends, so those characters in school are queer, and yet that's part of the story, but it's not a huge part of the story. It's just these are kids and these are who they are. And also just dealing with the kind of multiculturalism right in the classroom there. And so how did you approach finding a balance of angst and positivity in that sort of using the queerness and the fact that they all have a little bit different backgrounds?
I thought about the young adult novels that I've read. And when I was coming out, the majority of the books that I could find were about coming out stories. And that was really interesting to me. And I think there's such an important place for those stories. And at the same time, I wanted to understand what happens afterward and what other kinds of stories can be told about queer experiences beyond just the realization of somebody's sexuality and their experiences of sharing that with the world around them. So I wanted to see, you know, what would the issues be for Mitra, for B, for her family, when her sexuality is not the issue? The book starts and we know that she and B are both out as queer. We know that Mitra's dad is very warm and accepting. We know that B's family is on the surface saying that they don't have an issue with her sexuality, but that she feels pretty constrained by their desire for kind of a happy, shiny image. And so it gave me a lot of room and a lot of maneuverability to explore what would the issues be. You know, if the issue is not, I'm in love with my best friend and she's straight, there would still be problems for them to overcome. There would still be hesitations. There would still be family struggles. And so I really just wanted to get to explore all those other issues that they could experience and that I experienced in my own different ways. And then from the perspective of the different cultural backgrounds of the students, I thought back to who it was that I really connected with in Catholic school. And oftentimes, without, you know, consciously realizing it, I bonded with kids who were also children of immigrants or mixed race kids like I am, or kids who were not Catholic, so maybe they were Jewish or they were another type of Christian, or they were in the school because it was their neighborhood school, which was the case for me. And just being able to see what would the commonalities be that would draw these different teens together. So for Mitra and her gang of friends, it's that they can relate around some of the immigrant identity experiences. It's that they find these common experiences shared around queerness and gender. And it's also that they're, you know, a bit nerdy, that they're writers and theater kids and tech kids. So they just have their own world because of that.
They're nerdy. That's a good way to put it. And were, without giving a lot of the plot away, there was a time in the book I was hoping nothing horrible was going to happen. Like, you know, so much is talked about teen suicide, and I thought, oh, is this going to turn dark somehow? And the real darkness that was experienced was, well, which college am I going to go to? And so I kind of liked that the focus was on the struggles that youth go through, but that there are mechanisms of family, school, poetry, and there's a way through the normal teen period of life, whether you're an immigrant or not, whether you're gay or straight.
I thought for this story that it's really about the relationships, the relationship between Mitra and B, the relationship between Mitra and her mom and her dad and her sister. And so I wanted the conflict and the drama to organically originate from those relationships. And terrible, really heartbreaking things do happen to queer kids, to kids of color. And at the same time, Mitra is very lucky. She has a supportive parent and a supportive sister. She's got an amazing relationship with her best friend and a teacher who cares about her. And so while she does face some really intense heartache and drama around what's going to happen with B, what's going to happen with college, what's going to happen with her mom, and is she willing to love her mom again and connect with her mom again? All of that drama and all of that heartache is located within the context of love and of relationships. And she's fortunate enough to have the support from these different elements around her to find a way forward.
I love, like, you know, when they go to UW and just the difference in the way B and Mitra experienced that weekend. And I felt that was a real pivotal moment in the book for the reader and also for the characters, for Mitra.
Yeah. I like to see how these two girls who have so much in common are also experiencing their future and experiencing new possibilities in different ways. And Mitra is coming from a place of fear of losing what she has, the way that she felt she lost her mom in the past. And B is just ready to dive headfirst into what's to come. And at the heart of it, this is a love story. And it's a love story between these two girls, but also between Mitra and her family. And I hope that readers of all ages can connect to that core of the vulnerability of love and the bravery of love, and also connect to the way that poets throughout time have been able to express that in ways that are meaningful to the characters.
Yes, yes. You are not only an author, but you are also a therapist. And I wonder how that has influenced how you present story and is, in fact, why you chose to write a book geared towards teenagers and young adults.
Before I started my private practice that I currently have, I worked at a nonprofit organization that was serving girls and non-binary young adults. And I worked one-on-one and with families, mostly with teen girls and trans and non-binary kids. And I found myself really questioning a lot of the narratives that I was told about teens. I think that there's kind of a cultural belief that they are self-centered or immature or too impulsive, not rational. And the deeper I connected with and built relationships with these young people, the more I understood that they are so creative, they're so imaginative, they're hopeful, they're energized. They see a way out of things and solutions to problems that adults, because of our age and the constraints of adulthood, that we can't envision. And I really began to appreciate how powerful the energy and the spirit of young adulthood can be. And at the same time, I was seeing that I felt like the adults and my generation had failed these young people as they were facing, you know, all of the consequences of what was happening politically and culturally in our country at the time. And I felt like, what am I offering to young people? What can I do to create a sense of hope or optimism that even though they'll go through hard things, that they could envision that they could have a beautiful life and a life where they're loved and fully accepted? And so that inspired me to write young adult fiction. And as a therapist, I practice a modality of therapy called narrative therapy, which is really connected to storytelling. It's about making meaning from our experiences across time and being able to have a cohesive story for where we've been, where we're going, and also how we may have been told by the dominant culture that we don't measure up, and how we can reclaim our stories for ourselves as an act of resistance against the forces that may cause oppression or harm. And so that narrative approach to therapy is also really infused into the way I write young adult literature. I'm focused on meaning and on how to create a sense of meaning over time for people so that they can envision that they could have a meaningful future and that they could have hope for where their lives are headed.
Somewhere in the book, you talk about, or Mitra talks about, almost this never-ending story that comes from our ancestors through us, and that realization that she's part of that and how powerful that is.
Yeah, absolutely. That, for me, was a real narrative therapy moment. In the training that I had to become a therapist, my background is in couples and family therapy, which is really just a school of practice that's about relationships. And that includes intergenerational patterns. And so I thought a lot about what are the patterns and the legacies that are transmitted to me from my parents, my grandparents, my ancestors? How am I a continuation of their stories? And that includes their trauma, but it also includes their resilience, their survival, and their ingenuity. And for Mitra, I wanted to explore how her never-ending poem with B, you know, is truly never-ending because she can link it back to the poems that were written by Hafez or Ferdowsi or the other ancient Persian poets. And she can link it to her, you know, ancestor who wrote poetry in Iran. And she can look ahead to the future generations and see that she's just this one moment in time on a continuation of a narrative. And that gives her a sense of meaning, a sense of connection, and also, I think, a real sense of belonging.
Just another epic love poem. Parisa Akbari, thank you for talking with us today about your book.
Thank you so much for having me, Suzanne. I appreciate it.
That was my conversation with Parisa Akbari on her coming-of-age story for young adults, though I enjoyed reading it too. Just another epic love poem. The poet Naomi Shihab Nye was mentioned several times in the book. We'll listen to some of her poetry later in the show. Let's take a short break before we talk with some actual young poets from the Marin Poetry Center. Stay with us. I am Suzanne Lang with a novel idea. Marin County, California is just about to launch their first Youth Poet Laureate program, encouraging the use of art and expression in younger poets to actively build social change and develop their own voices within their communities. The Marin Poetry Center, along with California Poets in the Schools, has sponsored the predecessor to the Laureate program with their Youth Poet Ambassador program, and will now visit with two Northern California students who are these ambassadors of poetry, along with their coach and mentor. Welcome, Maxine Flasher Duzganish, Naomi Koh, and Cade Palmer, all involved in poetry, and in particular, the Marin Poetry Center's Youth Poet Ambassador Program. I'm just really excited to talk to you all today. Maxine, I want to start with you, since you are the coordinator of this program and what is emerging into the Youth Poet Laureate Program. So why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about the Marin Poetry Center, the California Poets in the Schools program, and then what's happening with the youth poets?
Sure. The Marin Poetry Center is a nonprofit organization based in Marin. We were founded in 1981. So for over 40 years, Marin Poetry Center has been inspiring poets and the craft of poetry throughout the Bay Area, and has even supported very acclaimed poets, including some U.S. poet laureates. And among Marin Poetry Center's programming is youth programming, including a high school poetry contest, as well as the Youth Poet Ambassador Program, which I started in 2021 with MPC board member and a Petaluma-based poet, Dave Cedar. We started this program as an unofficial poet laureate program, as at the time we didn't have funding, but currently we have received funding, and so we are now nationally recognized as Marin's first Youth Poet Laureate program with the support of California Poets in the Schools, Marin Community Foundation, Mill Valley Library, Marin Poetry Center, and Urban Word NYC, which oversees all of the national Youth Poet Laureate programs in the United States.
Wonderful. So, Naomi Koh and Cade Palmer, you are currently the Youth Poet Ambassadors. And Naomi, why don't you tell us about what that has entailed for you?
Yeah, so we actually hosted a little workshop. It was kind of based around the stages of life. And we've also been participating in a lot of readings, and I'm also looking forward to hosting one of my own workshops at an SFUSD school. And I'm really excited that I'm going to be giving or hosting a workshop for some of the younger students there. And I think something that's really great about Marin Poetry Center is that it kind of appeals to all ages. So we're able to reach younger, like middle grade students, and also people who are maybe at a later stage in life, but still want to write.
I can't help but to think how it must be very meaningful to students to have a workshop led by another student. And Kate, I wonder if you could talk about your experience as a poet ambassador and working with other students.
Yeah, so I definitely think working with students of all ages is something that's really important to both me and Naomi. And I went into Mill Valley Middle School, where I introduced the acrostic format to the students there. And so short story and a new way to express themselves. And in that class, those students had already been exposed to poetry, but I also had the opportunity to go into Kentfield Middle School into their poetry and writing class, where some of the students had a chance to try acrostic poetry before. And I think one of the things that's really important about sharing new formats of poetry, or even just poetry in general, with younger students is they may not have had a chance to experience poetry yet, and may not have known that it'd be something that they would be interested in expressing themselves in that creative format. For me, I was lucky enough to go to a middle school where I was exposed to a lot of creativity from a young age, but I know that's not true for everyone. So I think it's really important as youth ambassadors, as part of our outreach to other schools, to share creativity with our community.
I wonder if each of you, Naomi and Cade, can talk about how you evolved as a poet, as a writer who is sharing your poetry in a public way, and how that has impacted your life, and maybe in what ways, aside from being the ambassador of poetry. Naomi?
So I kind of grew up like writing poetry a lot. And I think definitely, especially in high school, since I go to a private high school, we were afforded more opportunities to write, and we were given opportunities to submit to our literary magazine. But I didn't really have much exposure to performance and reading my poetry out loud. And so I ended up applying to Marin Poetry's contest, and I was able to read one of my poems, which is kind of my first exposure again to reading out loud. And so I think being a youth ambassador has really given me the chance to share my voice more and become more comfortable with public speaking and kind of sharing my words with other people.
Cade, what about your experience as a writer of poetry?
So I am part of the creative writing program at the Marin School of the Arts at Novato High. And so we do regular in-class presentations. So I had some experience with public speaking, and we also are encouraged to do a few outside events. But for the most part, I'm speaking to my peers or reading my poetry to my community and those that I already know. And through this position, I've been able to meet with the Marin Poetry Center community on a few different events. I did a reading at the Novato Library earlier last year, and then I was able to do a reading at the Mill Valley Library in celebration of Beat Poetry with a lot of the Marin Poetry Center members, and I was able to meet the San Anselmo and San Francisco laureates, as well as Robert Haas, the previous U.S. Poet Laureate, and that was a really amazing experience. And I've also think I've learned a lot from other Marin Poetry Center members who've shared their work and learned a lot about writing from hearing their perspectives and the type of writing and getting outside of the bubble of my own peers' writing, I guess.
Poetry can be such a personal form, whether you're writing about what you observe about nature or about other people or about your own emotions. So I imagine that for some people, that kind of expression can be both an outlet, an exploration, but also kind of scary. So Naomi or Cade, if either one of you, if that question resonates with either one of you.
I was definitely, for me, when I first started my journey with just writing in general, I was only writing fiction, like short story type formats. And when I first got exposed to poetry, I kind of started to understand it has sort of a unique capability for like emotional vulnerability. And when writing about like my own emotions, sort of processing how I feel through poetry, I think it is, I guess, a lot more raw compared to some other formats. And I, as I mentioned, as part of the creative writing program at my school, I regularly share my work with my classmates. So there's definitely that same aspect sort of brings me, brings me closer with my classmates, because we all have a mutual respect for each other and we share very personal work with each other. And I do think I've become more in touch with myself since I started writing poetry.
I definitely agree. I think that as like a little kid, I would always like write in my diary. And I think that that ended up kind of translating to poetry in a way. I would definitely use it to kind of vent or share my emotions. And I play the guitar and the piano. And so I would sometimes use poetry and translate those into song lyrics and make a song out of it, which also I think was a great outlet for me. I don't think writing for me has ever felt scary. I think it's more sometimes if we're reading it out loud or sharing it to people, because in some ways what you write is the most vulnerable expression of what you can do. And so in my senior English class, we've had a few open mics where we were invited to share poems we had written for that class. It wasn't mandatory to go, but I found myself going up a lot because I think that even when it is scary, you get this sense of kind of accomplishment that you've gotten to share your voice after you finished reading.
I wonder, Naomi, you're just about to run a workshop. And what is the thrust? How do you communicate? Do you do exercises, or how do you loosen people up to approach writing their own poetry?
I think it's definitely good to start with things they're familiar with, especially middle school, because they're still fairly, they might be beginners to poetry. And I also think beginning poetry is really, really cool. Start with things you're familiar with. It doesn't necessarily have to be your deepest, darkest secret. But I think when you write things that you know about, let's say maybe your neighborhood or even your favorite food, I think it's a great way to kind of express how you feel, because a lot of poetry is just writing how you feel. And it doesn't have to be like your, again, your darkest secret or maybe like a heartbreak or something, but you can still write things that are authentic to you and things that you believe in. And so I think when I'm leading that workshop, I think that especially because they're younger kids, I'll be able to kind of loosen them up by saying, hey, write about something that you see every day, or write about even like a friend, because I think when you talk about things that you're familiar and comfortable with, it kind of opens the doors to be able to talk about things that maybe you're not so comfortable with, or maybe things that might be new to you.
So it's a process.
Yeah.
And Cade, you mentioned a term, was it acrostics?
Oh, acrostics.
Acrostics. Describe that.
All right. So an acrostic poem is, you might be familiar with sort of the traditional like holiday card format where you write like a person's name and then you describe them with adjectives connected to each letter. So their name would be vertical and then each line would be like starting with the letter descending order vertically. So an acrostic poem is where you embed a word or a phrase vertically. And then there's a few different ways to do it, but a traditional acrostic, that the word starts each line. So if, let's say, for example, the word in question was just like happy or something, the first line would have to start with H, the second line would start with A, and so on. So that was the format that I introduced in the Mill Valley Middle School and Kentfield Middle School workshops to give the students a chance to try out a new format and a different way of expressing themselves.
Well, that sounds like fun too.
It is fun.
I'd love to hear, Cade and Naomi, something that you have written. Would you mind sharing at this point one of your work? Naomi, can you start us off here?
Yeah. Okay. So this is a sestina that I wrote for my English class this year. And so a sestina is, there's six stanzas that each have six lines, and each at the end of the line there's the same word. So you have one word at the end of every line, and those words repeat throughout the stanza. So that's just a little background. Okay. This poem is called Oscar. For months, he's been the talk of the town. You catch girls in class, drawing their arms resting on his shoulder. The chances of meeting him are one in a million. Still, you daydream about touching a boy so golden and dancing with him against a fire in the mantelpiece. What a stroke of luck that you've made friends of higher class. Somehow, you've garnered an invitation to a show that's in town. Stare at the mirror, blot the crimson, arrange the silk over your shoulder. For luck, smooth your hand over the wooden mantelpiece. Arrive at the theater. The decorations are glistening and golden. In terms of dollars, you feel like a million. There's an open bar. Everyone around you is going to town on ordering booze, yet the way they command the bartender reeks of elegance and class. Navigate your way back to your seat. You're stuck in a sea of onlookers, one in a million. And then you see him, and all you grasp are piercing eyes and hair that's golden. You meet him at the after party. He leans against the mantelpiece, a martini for companionship. Someone introduces him. That's Oscar, they say, and you say awestruck, I know, and Oscar laughs and you feel brave enough to touch his shoulder. You decide you need him more than anything in this small town. After party after after party, you search for him. The desire is more than you can shoulder. Your parents are worried and tell you to give up. Their hair looks more gray than golden. But you can't. He's never far from your mind. Oscar is special. He's one in a million. Maybe you'll see him again if you concentrate harder in class. At night, you dream of sitting with him by the fire in your mantelpiece. 6.5 years later, you slide your hand over a French-inspired mantelpiece. Your parents are gone, and you have the most elegant penthouse in town. Oscar is in your arms. He lays his head on your shoulder. Peering closer, his complexion is a little more bronze than golden. But you say nothing. There are guests over, and you have class. Don't you? Stare into the fire, pray they'll leave soon, count in your head to 1 million. Now, for more reasons than one, your name is the talk of the town. Sometimes you enjoy bringing Oscar to class, even if he hates talking. Smile politely, grip his shoulder. You assure people left and right. Don't worry, I wouldn't sell him for 1 million. You've had him replated, and he's beautiful enough to win awards, cloaked in a shine so dazzlingly golden. Back at home, you pick Oscar up, dust him off, and set the statue back on the mantelpiece. Thank you.
Thank you. That really has a narrative quality to it that was kind of fun to follow. It seems like that's something you had fun writing too.
Yeah, I came up with a plot twist in my head, and so I kind of wanted to write it around that.
Wonderful. What did you call that?
Oscar, like the award.
Oscar. I got that. Thank you, Naomi Coe. Cade Palmer, can you share one of your pieces with us too?
I would love to. This piece is called Salt Cricket, and I wrote it earlier this year for my creative writing class. Flicker and twitch, appendages of bygone flight. They drape your body in a stretch of lustrous silk. Around you, mournful incarnate. I promise not to cry, salt cricket. Leave your sorrows here with me. You crystallized my tears and hid them under rigid flesh. As I grew, I folded yours into mine, rubbed my guileless palms together, eroded you, bitter mineral, to saline integument. Rougher hands cast in a thick shell of brine, no longer grasp at the fleeting grail. When are you coming home, salt cricket? I'm waiting on porch steps, though it was me, in my haste, who maimed your cherished wings. Reaching for the forgotten skyline, my brackish tears drip like candle wax upon my salt-borne sepulcher. Thank you.
Thank you. Very vivid. And what an example that the two of you have presented of two different pieces, but that express so strongly. Thank you very much for sharing that. Before we say goodbye, I guess I want to ask you, Maxine, if you could share your experience of working with Naomi and Cade and many of the other students through the Poets in the Schools program and the Marin Poetry Center.
I think it has always been a passion of mine to be a mentor for youth as someone who was interested in poetry growing up in the Mill Valley School District and the Timopias School District here in Marin. you know, I had mentors of my own. And I think due to the pandemic and social media and academic pressures and all of these sort of global conflicts going on, there's sort of this underlying need for poetry more than ever as a way for, you know, teens and younger generations to be able to really reflect on what's going on and discover catharsis and self-expression as a way to connect their personal experiences with others. And that was something that I really struggled with growing up, being able to connect, especially my experience with mental health issues in my family with others, and poetry, and also dance, actually. I'm a performer and a performing artist. Through those mediums, I was able to really deliver everything that I was feeling on the inside and share it with others. So I think, you know, poetry, we need it more than ever. And we've seen already sort of a resurgence of poetry in public interest with, you know, Insta poetry, and poetry as sort of a means of social change, particularly among teenagers. And I think I have definitely grown a passion as a, you know, as an educator with Cal Poets in the Schools, and also a local dance studio, and another program called Artists in the Schools with Grow Gallery in Point Reyes, working with youth and sharing my love of art, poetry, and movement, you know, has been extremely satisfying. And there's nothing like seeing students of yours like growing up and then becoming, you know, mentors of their own, and published poets and, you know, performers, or what, you know, whatever they decide to pursue. So it's a very satisfying profession, and I'm happy to be in this world.
Well, thank you so much, all of you, Maxine Flasher Duzgunish and poet, youth poet ambassadors, Naomi Coe, Cade Palmer. Thank you for all your good work and your generosity with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. This was a wonderful experience.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Our visitors from the Marin Poetry Center, youth poets Naomi Coe and Cade Palmer, along with California poet in the schools, Maxine Flasher Duzgunish. I am Suzanne Lang with a novel idea. Guggenheim Fellow and Pushcart Prize winner Naomi Shihab Nye was born in St. Louis, Missouri, to a Palestinian father and an American mother. During her high school years, she lived in Ramallah in Palestine, the Old City in Jerusalem, and San Antonio, Texas. Of her, the poet William Stafford has said, her poems combine transcendent liveliness and sparkle along with warmth and human insight. She is a champion of the literature of encouragement and heart. Naomi Shihab Nye is also a favorite poet of Mitra, one of the characters in Parisa Akbari's book, Just Another Epic Love Poem. And I thought we might share some of Naomi's work, read for us by author, poet, and spoken word artist Jenny Orvino. Jenny's own book is Poetry, Politics, and Passion, Memoir, Poems, Personal Essays. And you can find her blog at jennyorvino.com. Here's Jenny reading Naomi Shihab Nye.
Before I was a Gazan, I was a boy and my homework was missing. Paper with numbers on it, stacked and lined. I was looking for my piece of paper, proud of this plus that, then multiplied, not remembering if I had left it on the table after showing it to my uncle, or the shelf after combing my hair. But it was still somewhere, and I was going to find it and turn it in, make my teacher happy, make her say my name to the whole class before everything got subtracted in a minute. Even my uncle. even my teacher, even the best math student and his baby sister who couldn't talk yet. And now I would do anything for a problem I could solve. Bees were better. In college, people were always breaking up. We broke up in parking lots beside fountains. Two people broke up across a table from me at the library. I could not sit at that table again, though I did not know them. I studied bees who were able to convey messages through dancing and could find their ways home to their hives, even if someone put up a blockade of sheets and boards and wire. Bees had radar in their wings and brains that humans could barely understand. I wrote a paper proclaiming their brilliance and superiority and revised it at a small cafe featuring wooden hive-shaped honey dippers and silver honey pots at every table. A Palestinian might say, "What? You don't feel at home in your country almost overnight? All the simple things you cared about, maybe took for granted. You feel insulted, invisible, almost as if you're not there, but you're there. Where before you mingled freely, appreciated people who weren't just like you, divisions grow stronger. That's what chosen and unchosen will do. Just keep your eyes on your houses and gardens. Keep your eyes on that tree in bloom. Yes, a wall. Ours came later, but who talks about how sad the land looks, marked by a massive wall? That's not a normal shadow. It's something else looming over your lives."
That was Jenny Orvino reading the work of Naomi Shihab Nye, a favorite author of Mitra, one of the characters in Parisa Akbari's coming-of-age story geared toward young adults, Just Another Epic Love Poem. We spoke with Parisa earlier in the show. We also visited with Naomi Coe and Cade Palmer and Maxine Flasher-Duzgunish of the Marin Poetry Center, all part of the Youth Poetry Ambassador Program, which will soon transform into their Youth Poet Laureate Program. I thank all of our guests today, and I thank you for listening. I am Suzanne Lang with production assistance from Mark Prell, Max Allen, and William Penny. Our music is from Peter Jacobson. We are a production of Lit Radio and Northern California Public Media. Stream us online, listen to past shows, and subscribe to our podcast at norcalpublicmedia.org. It's a novel idea.